Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The new documentary, Bully, has hit the local theaters. A special talk back event is scheduled for Tuesday, April 24th at 7 p.m. at the Drexel Theater in Bexley. For more information, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you. We'll also post a link to the Bully website. Right now, I want to welcome to the show Cynthia Lowen. She's the producer-writer of the new documentary, Bully, which takes a close and intimate look at the stories of five families grappling with the issue and its after effects. Cynthia is the co-author of The Essential Guide to Bullying. It's forthcoming from Alpha Books. She's also the producer of Going Home, a two-part documentary about teenage incarceration and recidivism. Welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Thank you so much, Anne, for having me.
Coming up later, we're going to hear from the chief of child and adolescent psychiatry at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and we'll also meet a local therapist who founded an anti-bullying outreach program in Bexley. Cynthia, it's kind of shocking, the statistics, when we hear that 13 million number. 13 million children in the United States will be bullied this year. How did you even begin to reduce it, for lack of a better word, to five examples?
Well, you know, it was very hard. We filmed with many more families than you see in the film. We probably filmed with about 20 or 30 families. You know, every family, every child who has experienced bullying, I think, you know, has an incredible voice and an incredible, you know, incredible thoughts to offer to this conversation. In the end, we felt that each of these five kids and families really reflected a different facet of this crisis, and that we felt like would each add to a conversation that we thought would depict a really, full look at what bullying looks like, what it means, and what are the stakes.
So tell us about the different examples. There was one little girl who caught your attention because she was arrested for bringing a loaded gun onto the school bus.
Yeah, you know, actually, we heard about her story through kind of the other side of the story, which is the heroism of the young man
right.
who had taken the gun from her. And, you know, as well, he should have been recognized for his heroism. We thought, you know, it's funny, no one's really talking about why she would have done that. And, you know, as we know, there's a very high correlation between young people who bring guns to school, between school shootings and bullying. And so we decided that we really wanted to find out what was the other side of this? What had been going on? What could have prompted her to do this? And when we met Jemiah and met her mother, as we suspected, we discovered that she had been bullied and picked on very badly on that bus ride to and from school, 45 minutes each way through rural Mississippi.
A few weeks ago, the ratings board of the Motion Picture Association of America gave Bully an R rating, and then an edited version of the film was given a PG-13 rating. The R rating would mean that kids wouldn't be able to see it without their parents. One New York Times columnist said that that's okay because Bully is a film to be viewed with the whole family.
You know, I think Bully is a film to be absolutely discussed with the whole family. Mm-hmm. I think it's a film to be discussed with educators. You know, I was coming out of a screening in New York on opening weekend, and a girl had come in with her mom. She must have been about 11 years old. And she said, I want to talk to my teacher and make sure that my teacher sees this. The reality is that, you know, kids who are in middle and high school, you know, they want to be independent from their parents. There aren't, you know, often kids that age say, you know, the last thing on earth I want to do is be seen at the movie theaters with my parents. So, you know, while we feel like this is a really important film for kids to see with their families and to see in environments where that discussion can be opened up, I think we also have to give kids the opportunity to go with their peers, to go with their friends, for kids to really start the conversation and say, you know, I want my parents to see this. I want my teachers to see this. And for them to also be part of catalyzing this change.
My guest is Cynthia Lowen. She's producer, writer for the documentary film Bully. It's in local theaters now. If you have a question or comment for Cynthia, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page as well and post your question or comment there. Cynthia, despite the title, the film is not about the bully per se, but about the victims. Why did you decide to focus just on the victims and their adult protectors, or lack thereof?
You know, I think we felt like the sort of perspective of the bullies is something that we see a lot of in our culture. I think we see, you know, plenty of aggression on reality TV shows. We see plenty of, you know, that kind of bullying behavior acted out in many different ways in our society. I think that what we really felt the story of this film was to depict what is that experience, and to for people, everyone who watches this, to A, feel empathy for those who are going through this. I think it's become so entrenched because, in a way, the experiences of what it feels like to be on the receiving end of that have been minimized. We've glossed it over. We've looked the other way. We've celebrated bullying in our culture. And I think that we felt like it was really important for us to understand, what does this look like, and why is it not just kids being kids, and why is this not just a normal rite of passage? That said, every single child in the film who's seen bullying, we got releases from their parents. We had conversations with their parents about why their children were in the film. Many of them saw the footage of their kids bullying and allowed their kids to be in the film because they hadn't raised them to be doing this and wanted them to be accountable. So, you know, they were also definitely a part of the process, but maybe less visible than the kids who are on the receiving end of the bullying.
You know, the adults, the administrators and teachers, some of them come across as real lunkheads as far as how they're responding to that. There's a scene in the in the film where the teacher, the middle school principal or vice principal, is breaking up a fight on the playground or outside, and she makes them apologize to each other, and one of them happily does and shakes his hand. The other one, as is described, is sullenly, you know, doesn't want to participate in that. And it turns out that that's the victim.
Right.
And that's a chilling thing right there, that you think, how many times have I seen that and thought, why don't those two kids stop fighting wherever you see it? And who knows if there has been a victim-perpetrator situation?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something that that we all recognize. You know, I think that when you see kids who become very frustrated with feeling like they can't get help, with administrators who say, you know, what's the big deal? Why don't you just shake hands and make up? Well, you know, conflict resolution doesn't work in a bullying situation at that age, because the bully, and you see this in that scene, the bully has no conflict in the behavior. It's the person being targeted who feels that they can't make it stop. And so when you try and make two kids shake hands, you know, that's denying the fact that there's an imbalance of power between those two kids, and that bullying is something that needs to be addressed in a much more in-depth way. You know, I think that what I take from that scene is that I don't think that administrator necessarily is a bad person. I think she's unequipped to deal with the complications in bullying, the power dynamics inherent in bullying, and why you really have to understand and take the time to really get the information about what is the situation. You know, you often see kids who have been very badly bullied, you know, finally they break, they turn around, they may lash out, they may hit the person who's been bullying them, and they get a detention, you know, as does the bully. It's like the same sort of consequences, whereas what led up to that is very different. And I think that kids who get to that point where they feel so utterly frustrated, I think are really at risk for a lot of things that are, you know, self-harming behavior, depression, and just really that you see that frustration of that child with how the administrator deals with that situation.
How did you define bullying for the purpose of this film?
You know, I think that we didn't set out to sort of do a clinical, you know, definition. We go by the definitions that are developed, you know, by Dan Olveus, who is a real pioneer in bullying work and has been doing this work for decades, who defines bullying as an imbalance of power. It is something that occurs over time. It's something that is repetitive. And it's something where the target is unable to make the behavior stop. So that's sort of the standard definition of bullying. I think that, you know, you see it played out in many different ways in each of these children's and family stories.
You know, as a journalist for over 30 years, I've been in lots of schoolrooms, and I know that the minute a journalist enters the schoolroom, things change. It changes the dynamics. And I was fascinated that you were able to get the footage you were. How did you manage to be the proverbial fly on the wall?
You know, we were a tiny team. The production of this film, there were, you know, a handful of days where we had a second cameraman or we had a sound person. But by and large, this film was shot and produced and we were in the field with just the director, Lee, who was also doing the camera work, and myself. And I was often doing the sound work. And sometimes it was just him alone. So we also were shooting on a very small camera, on a DSLR. It looks like a still camera. So I think that the presence of the camera was very uninvasive. Kids often didn't necessarily know that we were shooting videos. They thought that it was a still camera. And we were there all the time. So I think that, you know, maybe we were interesting for like the first 3 days of school. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the drama of middle school became far more interesting. And the kids also, you know, didn't know necessarily who we were following. We wanted to protect the kids that we were focusing on from any negative attention as a result of that. So we really filmed with everybody. We filmed everything. And, you know, I think that through that process, we were able to get a really, really intimate look inside what school looks like over time, over a year. You know, that's sort of how we did it.
The kids, the bullies, what were their reactions to the film that you know of?
You know, the parents, when we went to get releases from the parents, I expected them to be very defensive. And I know that when parents often try to speak with other parents, you know, David Long, Tyler Long's father, Tyler took his own life, and he had tried to speak with the parents of the kids who were widely known in the community to have been bullying Tyler. You know, there was a total denial, you know, that my kid would never do that kind of attitude. You know, I think we had the benefit of having video footage. You can't deny what you can see. But that said, the parents made a really, really courageous decision. I think that they decided that their kids would be accountable, that their kids would have to see themselves doing these behaviors, and hopefully as a result of that would say, you know what, I don't want to be that kid. I don't want to be the kid hitting Alex on the bus. I don't want to be the kid cursing him, stabbing him. And I think they thought it was an opportunity for change. One of the kids in the film who had been bullying Alex, we screened the film in Sioux City, Iowa, where mm-hmm. it was filmed. And after the screening, he wrote in on our YouTube page underneath our trailer, you know, Alex, I was one of the kids bullying you, and I'm sorry, you're my bud. So I think that there's change there. And I think that, you know, while it's very hard to see the behaviors of these kids, I think we also know that they're young and they still have a whole life ahead of them where they can absolutely change.
In the film, we meet two families, the Longs and the Smalleys, who had children who committed suicide because of bullying. How did you decide to work with them to tell the story about what is unfortunately the sad ultimate consequence?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, over the course of our filming, tragically, there were many families who lost their children over that school year when we were filming. We actually filmed with two additional families, John Carmichael's family in Texas. John took his own life. He was 11. And Montana Lance, who was only 9 years old. You know, we felt like the stories of the Longs and the Smalleys were both really inspiring in terms of their commitment to really transform what is, I think, the ultimate tragedy any family could go through, and really say, we want to transform our communities, and we don't want our children suffering to, we don't want that kind of suffering to be experienced by anyone else. So when we met the Longs, they're in the process of organizing the town hall meeting that you see in the film to talk about bullying in the community, to get the community involved, to get people in the faith groups in their community. And they had hoped to get the school involved. However, the school refused to send a single representative to that town hall meeting. So, you know, what we saw there, I think, is really a community that was really struggling with this. You know, and in the case of Kirk and Laura Smalley, I think we were just so struck by their immediate, you know, even in the immediate wake of losing their son, they immediately knew that they had to get out there and fight this and talk about this and raise awareness. They have been traveling the country going, they've seen over, you know, I think they've seen over 100,000 kids at this point, going and talking in schools and raising awareness through the experiences that Ty Smalley went through.
Cynthia Lowen, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Cynthia Lowen, she's producer, writer for the documentary film Bully. We'll continue our conversation about bullying when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, on the eve of tax filing deadline, we ask the question on everyone's mind, is this the best tax system we can come up with? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 70 degrees in downtown Columbus with cloudy skies, a wind advisory in effect until 7 o'clock this evening. A slight chance of rain this afternoon, otherwise we will see some sunshine mixed with clouds and a high of 75. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 44 degrees. Sunshine Tuesday, a high of 63.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio Northern, a university that invests in the success of its students by offering more than $56 million in gift assistance annually. Details about the Discover ONU Day on April 21st can be found at onu.edu.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Bullying is considered the most common form of violence experienced by young people in this country. This year, more than 13 million American children will be bullied, and some will take the ultimate refuge from the torture, suicide. Bullying tends to revolve around the schoolyard. A 2011 nationwide study found that 40% of teachers and school staff consider bullying a moderate or major problem in their schools, and that 32% of students between ages 12 and 18 report experiencing bullying. The new documentary, Bully, has hit the local theaters. A special talkback event is scheduled for Tuesday, April 24th at 7 p.m. at the Drexel Theater in Bexley. For more information, go to our website. We'll have a link there for you, wosu.org/allsides. Joining us now is one of the panelists for the talkback event, Dr. John Campo. He's chair of psychiatry at OSU, and he's the former chief of child and adolescent psychiatry at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Welcome to the show, Dr. Campo.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Despite the title, the film is not about the bullies per se, but about the victims. Let's talk about the bullies and where they come from and you know, how many manifestations of bully is out there.
I think that's really a critical question, because in a lot of sense, I really loved your question for the filmmaker and asking about how they define bullying, because in so many respects, what we're talking about is human cruelty. And sadly, who's not capable of that? And, you know, I was sitting here reflecting, if you had asked me, gee, John, have you ever been bullied? I would have said, most certainly, yes. But then if you asked me the harder question was, gee, John, have you ever bullied or been cruel to someone else? And I would have to say, yeah, most certainly, yes. I mean, I would argue that probably I was bullied more than I inflicted pain on others, but I think it'd be a lie to say otherwise. Now, what I'd also say is that I don't think I'm a persistently cruel or difficult person. So I think all of us are capable of being cruel to others. There is a group of young people, most typically boys, but not just boys, who are persistent bullies, right? Now, just as victims of bullying are at risk for a number of things, young people who bully persistently do appear at risk, okay? So I want to be careful to say that not everybody who's a bully when they're little grows up to be a criminal, right? Mm-hmm. Certainly don't. On the other hand, there is data that people who engage in bullying persistently are at greater risk later in life for criminality, for other forms of aggression and violence, maybe for substance abuse as well.
Is it, what's the chicken and the egg here?
Yeah.
You know, what yeah. comes first? Were they, is it a criminal mind that leads to the bullying, or just the bullying and the pattern of behavior that and the lifestyle that creates?
Yeah. Well, I think a couple things that I really think is important. I think that we certainly want to bring compassion and balance in thinking about not just victims of bullying, but the bullies as well, okay? And from the perspective of thinking about a bully, we have to sort of find a middle ground between the idea that, oh, boys will be boys, and sort of dismissing it as normative, which we shouldn't, versus on the other extreme, treating all of peer-related aggression as necessarily criminal. You know what I mean? So there's a balance, and there are different kids and different kinds of bullying, and I think we have to be careful to think about that. What if you look at just the whole issue of violence? What's the biggest risk factor to being violent? It's really kind of simple. It's having a Y chromosome. It's being male. Now, is that the only risk? There are plenty of others out there, and certainly we know that young people who have been exposed to violence themselves, who maybe have been maltreated themselves, we also know that there are certainly some children constitutionally who are more vulnerable to impulsive aggression. So they're out there. But this is a large problem, and I don't think we can boil it down to a single cause and effect thing. I really want to try and make the point that when you think about bullying and the consequences of bullying, they are multi-determined, you know? And you know, as an aside here, I've been listening carefully to all of this, and I think this is a really important issue. We know that the film focuses in on a number of families that have really been devastated by the suicide of a young person. Incredible tragedy. I think we need to be careful, however, that, you know, we know that bullying can be a risk for suicide. And there are some kids who commit suicide where it's hard to pick out other risk factors. It seems like the bullying was very operative, right? People have actually called these kind of type 3 suicides in the literature. It's kind of a funny term. But it's as troubling as it is, I think it's important that we do not allow ourselves to think about bullying as a justification for suicide and self-harm, or as a justification for indiscriminate violence. It's an important, troubling event that we need to work with our young people, not only to prevent the bullying itself and to manage the bullies, but also to help build resilience in our children who face cruelty day in and day out.
My guest is Dr. John Campo. He's chair of psychiatry at OSU. He's also former chief of the child and adolescent psychiatry at Nationwide Children's Hospital. He'll be participating in a special talkback event on Tuesday, April 24th at the Drexel Theater in Bexley. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you would like to join our conversation about bullying, I want to know, have you been bullied? And I also would like to hear from people who believe they were bullies and have bullied people, and hear from your point of view how the dynamic worked or worked for you. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Anne in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hi. My daughter was bullied from 7th grade up until this past year, and she's in 11th grade now. And I end up switching schools because it was nonstop. I went to every authority I could go to, and it just didn't work.
Why was she bullied, Anne? Well, I mean, in your estimation.
Well, you know, she's adopted, and she's full-blooded Native American. She is in a prominently white school,
okay. And
they just made fun of her. It's just they pushed her against lockers. They pulled her hair. The messages on the computer, it was just horrible. I even went to the parents, and as I was talking to this girl's grandmother, this girl actually walked up and spit in my face. I mean, it was a group of girls. The grandmother, what was raising her, said that her grandfather was a police officer and could not control her. I mean, and there was nothing. I mean, my daughter got so, it was to where she cried to go to school. The counselor there, it was like she just was kind of passing it off, like just make friends with her, these girls, because then once you make friends with them, then they'll be your friend. That's not the way these girls work. They were out of control.
Dr. Campbell, what is it with school counselors and school officials that say just try to make up and make it work? Do you feel like administrators and teachers and counselors are adequately trained in this issue?
Well, let's back up a minute. And what I would say is that one of the themes that runs through all of this is this idea that we get this notion, well, the kids should be able to work it out on their own. You know, certainly some conflicts between kids can be worked out on their own, but the fact that bullying is persistent, that's all
over
the evidence.
Yeah, in this case.
The evidence is there that the kids aren't working it out on their own. And as the adults, we need to accept our responsibilities here to protect children from themselves and from each other. So I don't think we can pass that off. Now, one of the things that I'd be very interested in the panel discussion next Tuesday is to hear from educators, because I really have to wonder to what degree there's been a bit of a death of common sense, partly out of fear of litigation. I don't know the answer. I'm not an educator. But certainly when you look at some of these situations, you know, we have responsibilities as adults, and we need to step in. Just like, you know, as adults, we need the government sometimes to protect us from each other. And with these kids who are persistent bullies, I mean, the child as described by this woman sounds like this is a pretty difficult kid.
Anne, have you seen the film Bully?
Yes, I have, and I actually went and seen it with my daughter. And she said, Mom, that is the way I felt. Yeah. And she went from a very happy-go-lucky child to a child that didn't want to come out of her room.
Right.
And, you know, and it was really hard, so I did step in. I had worked for the school system
good for
about
you.
15 years ago, and I stepped in, and I went to everyone, and it did not really stop, because they weren't just bullying my child. These group of girls were bullying other children, too.
Exactly.
And until I got actually called the police on this girl, it didn't stop. But it seems funny that once I did that, then everybody was on board.
Yes.
I had to get the law involved in order for some of these parents to really step up and say, my child is going to, there's repercussions for your actions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I've tried to teach my daughter. You hurt someone else, look how you felt, and that's the way, you know, you can't do that to other people. You have to have respect, you know, and if you give respect, you get respect.
Thanks, Ian, for your call.
Okay, thank you so
Take
much.
Take care, you bet. My guest is Dr. John Campo, Chair of Psychiatry at Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment for him, we're talking about bullying. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. From Tom on Facebook, he writes, as a retired middle school principal, I saw it every day. I hope someone finds a solution. I never did. From Edie on Facebook, our principal in Worthington was quick and effective at dealing with this 15 years ago. It's sad to see that it continues to be a problem in many schools. Glad to see more information is going out to help administrators who have a really difficult job. And an email from a listener writes, I would like to ask about what to do when your child says that she and other friends have gone to their counselor to talk about bullying being done by others. And the counselor's response is, it's not that big of a deal. Don't worry about others' behaviors. I'm sure he did not mean to be bullying. What do we know about the classic bully? I mean, I know there's a lot of iterations, but when it's a child, say your seventh or eighth grader or older, and they're bullying, do they see themselves necessarily as bullies? Do they know what the word is, and do they know that they fit the definition?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer. My guess is that a lot of children who are very aggressive, and there is some data about this, they view their aggression as defensive. You know, they oftentimes just feel themselves as responding to some sort of slight and feeling very insecure. I don't know that that's always the case. Listen, I think what we're talking about, and I think people are right in the sense that we're talking about our fundamental vulnerability as human beings to be cruel to one another. Depending on your perspective, it's what's the nature of human sinfulness, right? And if you look at all of these kids in the movie, and you certainly hear in the description below, and you know, I'm a parent. I was a kid. I have personal experience with this too. You know, I think most of us do. If you look at all of these kids in the movies, and what research bears out is that oftentimes the kids who are targeted are kids who are different in some way. They have some sort of developmental issue. They may have some sort of physical or medical or illness issue. They may be intellectually impaired, right? They may look different. We don't need that much. I mean, we live in a world where people from different soccer teams want to bash each other's brains in. So this vulnerability to respond in a, call it a tribalistic way, or to people who are different, you know, I think it's hard to argue that some of that isn't hardwired, and it is a problem that we need to address by trying to set limits on it, but also by trying to help the kids who are being bullied to empower themselves, right? I think just like we want to find a balance between boys will be boys and you're a criminal, I think we need to find a balance between, oh, the poor victim kid, and the other extreme being, you know, the old Eleanor Roosevelt, there are no victims, only volunteers. There's a balance here.
In the film, one of the main subjects, Alex, he's a 14-year-old in Sioux City, Iowa. He defends his tormentors and says that if not for them, what friends do I have?
Yeah.
How can a kid think a bully is a friend? Is the bully a friend in a way?
Well, it's somebody's responding to him, you know. I don't know, what's the old saying, better a knave than a fool, you know. He certainly there was some human interaction there, and he wasn't treated completely like a doorknob. One might argue that, gee, I'd rather be a doorknob, but we're wired for a relationship. Human beings are wired for a relationship. And just like there can be negative aspects, I think we have to remember that there are protective factors too. What are the protective factors for kids who are vulnerable to being bullied? If they have friends. the more we can find a way to develop peer relationships for these kids being bullied, the more we can help empower them to stand up when they can, the more we can empower their peers to stand up for them in some way and to speak up. And the more we can have a system that takes this seriously, the better off we're all going to be. But it's not a one-ticket solution.
Holly in Columbus, you said you have a daughter who stepped in when a friend was being bullied or when a friend was bullying.
When her friend was being bullied.
Okay.
They were in middle school, and the girl was constantly picked on. And she was, you know, one of my daughter's close friends. And my daughter would always say, well, why don't you say something? Why don't you stand up for yourself? But the girl was just not, she's not that way. So my daughter finally just could not stand it any longer and started picking on the bully and saying, hey, you know, I'm tired of you picking on my friend. Don't do it, you know. And the bully actually backed away and decided, you know, that it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, the pickings weren't so easy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so sometimes it does take another person to step in, but at the same time, I think a lot of the times we need to teach our children to stand up for themselves a little more. And even though it can be scary, that sometimes there's more benefit for you to stand up for yourself than they realize, because they think that it'll just get worse. But sometimes I really do think standing up for yourself carries its own weight.
Thanks, Holly.
Sure.
Thanks for the call.
Sure.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. When we return, we'll continue our conversation about bullying.
More than 10 states have introduced bills or passed laws intended to ban Sharia law. Advocates of such bans describe Sharia as a threat to our freedom. But what is Sharia law? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Sadaqat Qadri, who has written a new history of Sharia law. Qadri is a barrister in England who focuses on human rights issues. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Time is running out for you to win the new iPad and support our station. Our spring membership drive begins this Thursday, and by becoming a sustaining member early, you'll be automatically entered to win the new iPad. Visit WOSU.org now, make your sustaining gift, and get registered. No pledge is necessary, but your support will continue to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Thurber House, presenting crime novelist Ann Perry, reading from her latest mystery, Dorchester Terrace, Wednesday, April 14th at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at thurberhouse.org.
70 degrees with some clouds in downtown Columbus. There is a slight chance of rain this afternoon, and we'll see a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 75. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 44 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about bullying. This year, some 13 million American kids will be bullied. The problem is rampant, yet strangely below the radar for many adults, including school teachers and administrators. Coming up on April 24th, there will be a special talk-back event at the Drexel Theater after a screening of the new documentary film, Bully. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have links for the event and the film. Still with us is one of the panelists for the upcoming talkback event, Dr. John Campo, Chief of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, former Chief of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Nationwide Children's Hospital. He's now Chair of Psychiatry at Ohio State. Joining us now is another of the panelists, Susan Steinman. She is a child therapist and founder of Bexley Operation Respect. Welcome to the show, Susan Steinman.
Thank you. Thanks for doing the show.
What is Bexley Operation Respect?
Bexley Operation Respect is really an umbrella for a school community partnership of parents and community members who want a partner to support the efforts of the school to really create a much more respectful, compassionate school environment for the children. So it's an umbrella for the kinds of programming and training, as was discussed before. Addressing bullying isn't a one-time event. It's not a one-shot operation. It really needs to happen over time at all levels. So this is a commitment, basically, on the part of the school and members of the community to work at it.
Does Bexley Operation Respect, is it just at the high school level, or is that throughout the district?
It's throughout the district, K through 12. At the beginning, the emphasis was really on training in the elementary schools, but gradually the work has climbed to middle school and to high school. The approaches need, obviously, to be developmentally appropriate, so the work is different, but it is definitely a K through 12 approach. And from everything I know from the research and best practices, a whole school approach. Everything really needs to be dealt with at all levels, the student level, the teacher level, the peer group level, administration, and, of course, parents.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Beth, you're a substitute teacher and witnessed bullying. Tell us about it.
There was one school in particular. I had stayed away from middle school in particular because I knew how awful it could be. And we had some training as subs, and, you know, they did some, you know, some acting out, scenario playing. But it doesn't really prepare you for when you're just a one-day sub, and it's a really hard school. I mean, they had, it was a picture day. It was the one day that these kids got to not have to wear their uniforms. And this one girl, I mean, you know, some of these outfits were definitely questionable, but this one girl was dressed, she thought she was dressed cute. And she was dressed from head to toe in this outfit, and boy, did these girls went in and ripped her to shreds. And I don't know how she didn't do it without being in tears, but boy, did it bring back a lot of unpleasant memories. And you're not allowed to, you know, as a teacher or even a substitute teacher, you're not allowed to touch the kids, you know. You're not allowed to pull the kids apart, and they're acting five times worse for you than they would for a regular teacher. So, to get somebody involved, you know, it's really hard.
Susan Steinman,
yes.
Tell us how you respond to situations like that. It sounds like a real classic example.
Well, I think that one of the most effective and important aspects of bullying prevention is giving teachers who are on the front line. They are the ones, they're the adults that see children often in these situations, and they need the training and the tools, the skill development and the confidence and the support of their administration to address it, because in order to change the climate, the kids need a very clear and consistent message from the adults at school, and of course from their parents, but from the adults at school, that bullying is not acceptable, that it is not tolerated at school, that everyone needs to feel comfortable and included at school. So teachers, it's a very challenging situation. Teachers often, as most adults, are not sure what to do. It's not that they don't care. They don't know what to do. They don't know if they're going to be supported in what they do. So that training is essential.
Beth mentioned the fact that she wasn't allowed to touch the students. pull them apart, separate them physically.
Right. Well, a teacher who sees an incident may not be allowed to touch them, but she can or he can definitely insert himself and stop it. I mean, of course, if it's a physical brawl, that's a safety situation. But I think what children perceive, and the reason this is so challenging, is that they're aware that adults are not sure what to do or what they can do. And it makes the children feel even more alone and helpless with this. So the adults do need the confidence to be able to move in, say this is not acceptable, it needs to stop in the immediate, and then to take each child involved, the child who's been the target, and provide some support to that child, and that the teacher is going to work on making sure that this doesn't happen again and talk to the child who's done the bullying. And that child needs to be talked to separately in terms of behavior change. So that's a coaching process.
I would imagine that this isn't on the list of things that they want to measure teachers on in terms of success. In other words, it's not something that they're really trained to do. It's not something they're going to be measured on in the future. There's so many other pressures on teachers.
Absolutely.
You start to wonder, I mean, you know, how much more can they take and be expected to administer? John Campbell, what about the idea of touching kids or showing some kind, you know, standing in between them?
Well, I think the interesting question is, why is it that a teacher really can't touch a kid? Is this the death of common sense? I mean, I think that, so it's okay if somebody has gone the whole nine yards and smashed somebody else in the face, that we can step in between them and touch them. But in the midst of an escalating situation, we can't respond as we might as a parent, as we might as a concerned parent with somebody else's kids out on the playground. What's the reason for that? Is it fear of liability? Do our teachers really fear that they're going to go to jail if they actually get between these kids and actually set some reasonable limits? I think parents, on the other hand, are responsible. I mean, have we really helped create a situation where teachers are afraid to do their jobs? But I don't accept that excuse. This idea that, well, we're disempowered. Well, you know,
I can see a substitute might feel like they're just parachuting into a situation.
I understand, but you know what? You're the responsible adult in the room. Isn't that what we're supposed to be? I think the parents in the film make a point. You know, we send our kids to school or on the bus, and there's a responsible adult in the room. Certainly on moral grounds, we have an obligation. That doesn't mean that we can prevent everything. I mean, but it means that we have an obligation to at least do our best. Kind but firm. I think there is this concern about an abdication of our responsibility as adults, and we take refuge in fears about litigation sometimes. And not just teachers. This is true for physicians and medical professionals. Mm-hmm. I've seen this time and again. We're all vulnerable to this.
David in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Hello. Yeah, I just want to kind of talk about what my story was. We moved down to Southern Ohio from Columbus when I was in third grade. And from that point on, we were like outsiders. I looked a little bit different than the other people. And there were a lot of situations going on that caused me to be bullied incessantly. I just want to point out my frustration in that time and time and time again, where an adult was present, available, and could have done something, never stepped in. And that really impacted me emotionally and psychologically. And I mean, I still have I have some scars and I have some issues I probably deal with to this day because of that. Feeling that no one was there. Now, my mother was there, but that was it, you know, and your mother has to be there. But I could tell you time after time where, you know, there would be a ring of bullies around me, and then a larger ring of individuals watching the action, and adults all over. I mean, one stands out in particular at a football game, and it was the first and last football game I ever attended. And I wonder how different my life would be today if I hadn't gone through that.
Mm-hmm.
It really impacted me. And to this day, I have a tendency to overreact at injustice. I've broke up some fights myself. Well, in fact, here, one of our local communities, I think the kids were doing a fight club thing, and I jumped in and might have even endangered myself or my family. So I just want to let you, you know, tell you about that.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Well.
Susan, in the process of your work with Bexley Operation Respect, do you hear stories like this from adults who are still working out issues?
Absolutely. I actually, you can read the research, but you don't even need to read the research to realize the long-term scarring from this kind of bullying. I had the experience of just sharing over a cup of coffee, the work that I was doing with the school, and watching the eyes of my friend well up with tears, reliving and experiencing the guilt for being a bystander when she was in school and thinking about the children who had been abused by their peers and not doing anything. And I think what our last caller, David, recounted of the re-victimization for children of seeing their peers and the adults who were supposed to be there caring for them, for whatever reason, not responding, not standing up, not saying in some way this is wrong, it's a very powerful thing, and it lasts a long time, whether you're the child who has suffered the bullying or whether you've watched it and had to repress all those memories. It's with people for really over generations.
What if you're a parent who suspects that your kid is the bully?
Well, this is tough because no parent wants to see their child as anything other than a perfect angel. So it's very difficult.
I guess I read The Bad Seed, and I've never been the same since.
Yeah, I know. It's very difficult for parents, but I think this is where community and parent education comes in, that this is not about bad children or bad parents or bad schools. As Dr. Campos said, everyone has the potential for bullying other people. And so if there can be some education that it's a help to the entire community to be open to that and to watch for signs from your children.
Susan Steinman, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Susan Steinman, she's child therapist and founder of Bexley Operation Respect. Also, Dr. John Campo, chair of psychiatry at OSU. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.